Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. Today's episode is with Ghazal Hassan. Ghazal is a play-by-play man for CSUN men's basketball and UC Riverside baseball, so he has some unique insight into the Big West. I always like finding out what other people think of Cal Poly and what other people think who aren't from here of San Luis Obispo in general, and so it was fun to talk to him. Before the Cal Poly CSUN game this past Saturday, of course, CSUN was able to pull that one out in overtime after a furious comeback by the Mustangs. But Ghazal Hassan was really fun to talk to, gracious enough to spend some time in a quiet room at Mott Athletic Center pregame. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. It's Ghazal Hassan on the Fansmanship.com podcast. Rhythm is the bass and the bass is the treble. Where infidel rebels and tribes be clashing. No more paint dripped in the latest fashion. Police lights flashing, payday advance. So here was, and I'm going to butcher your name. So Ghazal Hassan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Yes, Ghazal Hassan from CSUN and UCR.
Among other places.
Southern California college sports in general,
our,
I will say.
Our director of basketball operations, Tom Osborne, for the women's team at CSUN. Whenever I see him, very nice man. He used to be a high school coach.
Not the former coach at Nebraska.
No. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's why he calls himself
he's
T.O.
He's gone from the head coach, football coach in Nebraska, and now he's doing DBO
He does go by Thomas. Maybe that's why.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Because he's in that age group.
Okay.
And I always tell T.O., I say, hey, T.O., good to see you, because he's just a genuinely positive, nice guy. And his response cracks me up is, well, good to be seen, you know.
So good to be seen
so
here
good
with
good for both of us to
Ghazal.
Be seen. Very nice to meet you.
Yeah, in person.
I hope this is no disrespect to your previous colleague, J.D. Scroggin.
Yeah.
Because I came into my knowledge of Fansmanship through, I think JD. His name is John. I don't know if he goes by Josh or J.D.
I'm good friends with him, either one.
Blogging with Scroggin, good dude. I loved his tweets, and then I finally, when I started doing the men's gig here, I met him, and good guy.
Yeah.
So wish him well. Not that I don't wish you well either.
Yeah, J.D.'s awesome and not writing anymore. Of course, Lucas Clark is the Tribune guy now, but J.D.'s still a really good friend of mine. I was actually at a barbecue at his house a couple weekends ago. So, he's doing really good. So we're here with you. You are the play-by-play guy for CSUN basketball and UCR baseball. Is that correct?
I owe a few people money, but yes, that's...
Okay, fair enough,
It's all factors.
among other things. And of course, CSUN this year is, you know, middle of the pack so far in terms of Big West play.
They're tied for sixth, the game out of fifth, I believe, right now.
Tied for sixth with two other teams, including
Riverside
Cal Poly.
Right.
And we see, of course, Riverside is a team that, and we can talk about this later, but, you know, Taylor Johns is gone now. CSUN is a team that that can't be in the tournament this year. How has that been covering a team that isn't going to have a chance at playing in the postseason? It's got to be, you know, just kind of maybe a different vibe. Maybe not. Maybe Reggie Theus doesn't let it be a different vibe.
This sounds horrible. For me, as long as the direct deposit hits, I'm okay. But no, I mean, obviously, listen, I've gotten to know the guys on the team and the people associated with the team, people who work in that department. And it's a difficult situation. And unfortunately, not a lot of information has been disseminated about the whole situation.
Right. Well, being in L.A., you don't have eyes on it like you would if it happened at UCLA, which is maybe a blessing and a curse for CSUN in general.
I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, not at CSUN, but somewhere else, and they said, you know, it is a blessing in a disguise sometimes to not have the attention. But I just feel for the team. And, I probably heard the same 30 stories you've heard, and I've heard, you know, from people I trust and people I don't trust. But bottom line for me, what hurts me about this is Trey and Landon Drew.
Right.
They're both team first guys, first and foremost, and they've both been good in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, you're taking away two postseasons from them because they lost the postseason in essence last year when you took half the team away, and now this year you're officially taking the postseason away from them. And listen, I understand. And I have my issues with the NCAA. If you follow me on Twitter, you understand that. But
if you don't have issues with the NCAA, maybe you're not paying attention.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, I understand that rules are rules, and schools need to enforce certain rules.
Yeah.
But just it seems to me a bad precedent to talk about accountability and values. And here are two guys who are real great student athletes. Right. They're the example of what you'd want. I think Trey, the last couple of semesters, has been in the varsity end, which is the upper echelon of the academic performers in terms of UCLA season athletes.
Yeah.
And you're denying that, you know, and unfortunately, Landon left the team. I don't know if that was the reason. I haven't spoken with him. Right. There are probably a bunch of reasons in there. But as far as it's a question that you and I ask a lot because we cover sports. Right. Is the cone of silence worse than just if you came out and said what they did? You know, I don't know how you believe. I always believe the cover-up is always worse than the scandal.
Yeah, my imagination can make things way worse than anything that could ever happen in reality, you know, 99 times out of 100. Manti Te'o, maybe the exception.
Right. If you're going to tell people that this is about accountability, and then you're not going to comply with freedom of information, you know, requests.
Well, and there's freedom of information on one side, and then on the other end, there's the, you know, there's the concept of privacy
right.
and HIPAA and all the things. I mean, it's probably why we won't hear a ton unless, you know, Taylor Johns decides to speak out at UCR. I mean, same kind of a thing. He violated team rules. Like that's probably all you're going
to
get.
And I know Taylor's a big fan of fan membership. So Taylor, if you're listening
he's
to
not
this,
a big fan.
No, he is. If you're listening, I would love to sit down with you.
I would love to too.
And let you tell your side of the story.
No, absolutely. I mean, it'd be interesting to hear for sure.
And that's another thing with, you know, for people who don't know, Taylor Johns has been dismissed from the team, and I used to work over at UCR. I know Coach Cutts a little bit, and I know.
And he was great with me preseason. Like, he was super straightforward. Him and Coach Taylor at Fullerton. Mm-hmm. Two guys who like got back to me and were like, I mean, who am I up here in SLO, whatever.
Yeah.
But they got back to me and they were super accommodating, super great with their time. Reggie Theus too, gave me a call.
You have a reputation of being soft. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly though, but it was.
It is great.
They both seem like great guys. So sorry, I just.
But
Coach Cutts it.
Whenever something like this happens, we always hear the schools very well crafted. I mean, there's 100 people who get paid a whole lot of money to craft these things. I kind of want to hear the athletes say, you know, I guess you call me a populist in the sense of, you know, H.L. Mencken or Mark Twain. The problem is now populists aren't as intelligent or educated or as clever as those two guys. But in that sense, I'd love to hear the other side of it. I'd love to hear how Taylor Johns, because I saw a couple of his tweets, and they made sense to me, what happened there with regard to his, you know, whatever rule he violated, I think to me is secondary, the relationship there. That's what I'm interested in, because when I deal, and I'm sure you, when you deal with the athletes, I understand who their relationships are, you know, across the board.
Well, it's one thing when I see a guy like, and I'll just use this example, because the Big West is chock full of them, like Tyler Lamb, when he came to Long Beach, like, I thought he was going to be a like two-time Big West Player of the Year. I thought, man, this guy, I saw him play at UCLA his freshman year, and I'm saying to myself, man, this guy is like, he's got like skills out, you know, crazy.
High major player.
High major talent, high major player. There's no way he's not going to average 25 in this Big West Conference. And he comes in and it doesn't go well. And for some of these guys, you know, you scratch your head and wonder, like, okay, what's this, like you said, relationship or what's this, like, dynamic here that's not allowing this guy to do well in this place? And it's the crazy interesting thing about college sports in general, not to like completely like generalize everything, but it's the crazy interesting thing in terms of like an 18-year-old picking a place to play, and how does he get along with these other guys who are, you know, kind of placed there? How's he get along with the coaching staff, et cetera, et cetera? And in the case of UCR and Johns, the idea that that he's been there for 3 years already. He's been the heart of that team. 2 years ago, he was their go-to guy as a sophomore, no questions asked, and everybody had to game plan against him. I mean, he was the guy.
Embarrassingly enough, I voted Taylor Johns Player of the Year preseason when I got the poll.
Me too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You weren't the only one.
John Ramey, who's the play-by-play broadcaster.
Did I? Yeah, I think I did.
I definitely did. There was two guys I was going back and forth, and I gave it to Taylor just because my friend John is the play-by-play guy. And
Luke Nelson might have been the other one that I might have thought about.
He'd lauded Taylor, and he actually told me, it was funny, because a couple weeks ago we were talking, because we were about to play, CSUN was about to play UCR, and John said, you know, this guy could be the best D1-era player for this school if you look up and down.
Totally.
And just what he brings. I mean, the level that they were playing at, you know, 10 years ago versus the level they're playing at now is completely different.
Well, my UCSD Tritons replaced them at Division II when UCR went D2 to D1, right around the turn of the millennium.
Uh-huh.
UCSD replaced them in the CCAA, I believe. So, you know, you have some like, you know, they haven't been D1 that long. And this is a guy who, you know, 4 years ago, Riverside was, you know, maybe considered a little bit of an easier game. Now they have, you know, three or four players you really have to prepare for, and they're never an easy game, it seems like.
They were 12-2 or 11-2 at home last year, I think. And then So when CSUN went there, they Riverside, I think, had won 4 of 5. They were 4-4, 3-4, I forget, in conference. Yeah. And they had 4 straight games coming up at home. And they lost all 4 of those games. So you thought, oh, wow, this is going to be a landmark year for them with regard to wins and conference wins. Right. And then it just shows you how everything kind of falls apart sometimes. And it's unfortunate. I think he had something like 1,400 points, like almost 800 rebounds.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Block shots and all this stuff. Yeah, and now he's done.
So let's get to CSUN, because that's who Cal Poly's playing tonight, and that's who you get to watch every night. How good is Kendall Smith?
You know, Kendall, I haven't seen Kendall a lot. Obviously, his work speaks for itself.
Right.
He's relentless. He's athletic. His biggest curse may be that he's got to play the one, because CSUN doesn't have a point guard.
Right.
And they have a slew of guys who can play the two.
Right.
So that's maybe his whole thing, is he would probably be better off on the wing.
Oh, yeah.
But he's doing what is needed for the team. I'll tell you what, I go up to Kendall, and Kendall's one of those guys that it's about winning for him. Like, he wants to score 30 a game, but he wants
and he
to
can.
Score, he has, but he wants to do that because he wants his team to win. I was talking to him one day, and he said, "Hey, man, no more losing." That was his no more losing.
Yeah.
There was a practice, I forget if it was last year or this year, and it wasn't going very well. Mm-hmm. And Coach Theus challenges the team. He said, "You know, gentlemen, when things don't go your way, I view how you react, you know, and some of you guys fold. And I remember that you fold under pressure." And it's funny, because coaches have told me this. Sometimes they like guys to talk back a little bit. And Kendall wasn't disrespectful, but he said, "Hey, coach, no, you're wrong, coach. No, 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 I'm built for this. No, no, no." And I'm like, all right, a little check mark. Let's see. And he's lived up to his hype, his own self-imposed hype. So I've been impressed with Kendall this year. I think the issue with the team has been a little bit more about cohesion, because they had parts missing and people coming and going.
And you look at CSUN's, I mean, this is the next question, I think, or maybe not the next question, but it's a question I have, is like, you know, talking with Coach Theus before the season and looking at who's on that roster, who's not playing this year, mm-hmm. who's not eligible yet this year. I mean, there's a starting five on that roster, I feel like, at least, or there's at least a number of real impact players potentially. And I talked about it, you know, you can have really good examples like James Ennis, and really good examples like what's going on at Long Beach with Gabe Levin, mm-hmm. and Faust, or you can see what happened at Long Beach with Tyler Lamb. I mean, there's kind of both ways that this can go, but on paper, CSUN seems stacked for next year.
There's a good news, bad news. The good news is you have a bunch of guys with D1 experience. The bad news is they've never been played together. Now, I've been able to sit with Chris Pompey, who's the recruiting coordinator in essence for Coach Theus. He's real big on guys that can play together, that play as a team. Now, obviously the record hasn't shown it the last couple of years, but he told me he was out watching a kid who I think is going to end up going to UCLA. One of the big kids. I think maybe might have been the Chino Hills kid's going to UCLA.
Okay.
And he said, you know, the guy, he said he was talking, there's some tournament. Yeah. So, you know, the guy that impressed me was this guy who nobody's on.
Right.
And he was a guy who was playing with everybody. Like, he was playing with the high-end guys, and he was playing with the low-end guys, and his game didn't change.
Okay.
And so in a conference like this in particular, it's so much about chemistry. It's so much about how guys play together.
Yeah.
That's how Irvine's been successful. Yeah. I think that's what Coach Gannat has done at Hawaii. He's kind of bought that team. You know, and they're super talented. We just saw them on Thursday, bought them together.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the challenge for Coach Theus. And this is the thing is the plus and minus for Reggie in dealing with him, is that he wants to be a teacher.
Right.
He didn't like yelling at guys. He didn't like that. I mean, he does it. He doesn't like that. He
does it when he has to, but he'd rather have guys who are to a point where he can be more cerebral, maybe.
I was the first year I was working with him. It was on the road because it was the night before. It had been kind of a rough practice, and we were working out, actually. We were in the gym in the hotel. We're just on the elliptical or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was kind of joking with him, like, "Oh, you got after him tonight." And like, he was genuinely like, he's like, "I don't like doing that." He was kind of sad about it. He's like, "I don't want to be a jerk. I mean, I want to teach these guys how to win."
To win is sometimes an intensity level that when you're 18 isn't necessarily apparent sometimes, even for a coach and for a guy who's played in the NBA and had a successful basketball career like Reggie Theus had. I mean, it's got to be, I mean, you have to figure out a way to get them there. I know there was a game in the middle of Cal Poly's 5-game losing streak they recently had, and I asked, you know, Joe, how's the communication right now? He goes, "It's pretty one-sided."
Yeah.
He said, you know, he doesn't give him to him on the court, but he's, you know, I was just in the locker room and it was pretty one-sided. I pretty much did most of the talking, and like, this is how this went, and that's how it had to be right now.
He's like to get, he doesn't like to yell. His funniest line in practice, he says, a couple years ago, they missed some free throws.
Yeah.
and they lost a game because they missed free throws. And he wasn't happy about it. So let's just say at the next practice, there was some running involved.
Uh-huh.
And he said to the team, like, gentlemen, I'm not upset. This is just to explain to you that when you do things incorrectly, there will be consequences.
Yeah.
So I could deal with that. That's kind of how he prefers to do things.
Yeah. It's super interesting. You know, having him as a coach. Jim Les was in here last. I mean, mm-hmm. There are some really just interesting, fascinating coaches to me. Munson always is like just the. I mean, he's my favorite to watch in the conference. I really just feel like this conference has a lot of really interesting, worth following. Kind of coaches in the conference. I want to talk a little bit about Cal Poly just because I'm always interested in how people who aren't from San Luis view San Luis Obispo and Cal Poly. In other words, in the Big West, it's kind of a unique thing. Maybe Davis is the only other kind of college town that's a true college town, you know, somewhere. It's a old gym we're in right now. You know, it's a program that's kind of had its ups and downs and kind of beyond an NCAA tournament bid from a 7 seed the last couple of years hasn't been, you know, hasn't had a winning record in conference in 3 or 4 years now, and won't this year in all likelihood. I mean, they can break 500, I think, still if they win all the rest of their games. But what's like the perception of Cal Poly for other teams coming in to you? What unique challenges, if any, does it present? I've always felt like Cal Poly in the past has had like a thing that other teams have to be like prepare for, like, which is just grinding it out and having to mentally be ready for it. I felt like the beginning of this year that was a little bit different, but what's your perception of the program or the school from afar?
We got to remember, I'm not a coach or an administrator. I'm a broadcaster. Right. This is heaven. Are you kidding me? I also have two very close friends who went here.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured out a way. I was joking with Gio about it. Mm-hmm. They're in the area this weekend. They're doing their dirt bike thing over in Pismo Beach.
Sure.
And it was one of those things where they went, one of them, I think they're both engineering guys, obviously, mm-hmm. but one of them is an attorney now, and one of them works as a programmer. He used to be a Yahoo guy. And it's interesting because they figured out, they finagled a way mm-hmm. to where they've stayed in touch with enough people here so they can do the long weekends here.
Right.
And I was talking about this with Gio, with the SIT, Chris Giovanetti, is that, you know, you go to Santa Barbara, it's a little bit overrun, like on President's Day weekend or something like that.
Yeah.
But you come up 90 minutes north, and it's actually not that bad.
Right.
The issue is trying to find a place where you can actually like a hotel late. Or so if you know somebody up here, you know, actually I have a college buddy. I realized, and he was a little older than me, but he tweeted that I was here. He's like, oh, you should have called me.
Yeah.
I live about 10 minutes from the campus.
Yeah.
And he comes and he still goes running right around the campus here.
Yeah.
But from an athletic standpoint, I mean, it's intriguing, and we'll get into Tom Barkin a little bit for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
But I got an opportunity to cover JC basketball as well, so I got to know David Nwaba's coach
at Santa Monica.
So, and I'm sure you know the story, but David Nwaba, his first year at SMC, had just a phenomenal season to the point where like Pac-12 coaches were calling Jerome and saying, you know, if he stays there, let him know. We don't have a scholarship available, but if he stays there another year, we'll commit to him right now.
Right.
But he came up with this, I think his parents and his brother or sister or something like that.
And his sister went to school at Santa Barbara. She's a world-class heptathlete Sharon Day Monroe, who went to Poly. So they're like the two best heptathletes in the country.
Right.
And they're both Big West blue-green rivals.
Blue-green rivals.
Yeah.
But from what the story I was told, said his folks were impressed with just not only the academics here, obviously, but like, hey, this is a nice place to go to school. You know, and Dave thought about it and said, well, 3 years of eligibility versus two.
Yeah.
And he, you know, I think the first year he was here, you guys, that was the tournament year.
That was the tournament year, yeah.
Yeah,
and along with Chris Eversley and some of those other guys. And certainly, you know, in terms of like taking them, I think the football team calls it like Recruit Beach or like Commit Beach. Like they take them to Pismo Beach and call it Commit Beach or Avila and just like they just make it happen. I mean, just because no other place is kind of like it in terms of, you know, the rural nature. I'm from Cayucas originally. So, you know, it's like I came back here after I went to school and lived in Florida and Colorado for a while. But how'd you get into broadcasting?
Very circuitous route. Honestly, I was an undergrad at UC Irvine. I was a humanities major and I was looking for I didn't know anybody because I came in midterm. They wouldn't take me for the fall. I had to wait till January.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, I'm in a strange city. I'm a strange state. I'm from out of state.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody. Let me find somewhere where I can make some friends. And I went to the radio station.
Uh-huh.
And as the joke goes, I kind of hung out there for 4 years and picked up a degree along the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did whatever, like we were talking before, I did whatever everybody does. I did the internship thing and this, that, and the other. And then I went to grad school at UCLA. So I was in that big media market.
Right.
And it was just something kind of I putzed around with. But then it's, you know, you realize it's not as writing as journalism goes. can't really make a living per se doing it.
Right.
So I was telling you, I worked in the film business for a little bit as a writer, and it just never went away. And all my friends who at 22 were in the broadcasting business, 7-8 years later, they were all still in it, and they'd all moved up. And they'd all check in on me, hey, you should do this, you call this guy, you should do that. So a friend of mine, who I hadn't, we all have this friend who's a really good guy. When he's with you, you hang out all the time. Mm-hmm. And then he'll just disappear for months and sometimes years at a time. So this friend of mine, we worked together. We interned a bunch of places together. And he moved to Chicago. I moved to Florida. Okay. I don't think I'd spoke to that guy 5 years. Somehow he called friends of friends and got my number because I know he didn't have it. Said, hey, man, I'm back in town. And he was friends with this other guy that we'd grown up with who now was in almost an executive position with radio. Uh-huh. So we talked. We did some freelance stuff, and then I got back into it. It's an interesting story. I took a just for fun because I was working as a writer, and then we had the writer's strike in the fall of 2007.
Right.
So they told us, you know what? It could be a while, so hunker down.
Did you write anything that people would know?
I was for on and off for about 5 years. I worked as a writer for a number of comics. Pauly Shore was one of them.
Okay.
So I wrote a movie, a TV pilot, nice. A bunch of jokes with Pauly Shore. That was kind of my big claim to fame. Okay. I have had a movie produced, but it wasn't a very good one, so we'll leave that out.
So you're not even going to say the name of it.
Well,
I
don't know if contractually I can do it. I was offered a lot of money to write a film based on a kid's toy at one point.
Uh-huh.
And it was so ridiculous to me that I turned it down. And now whenever I tell people that story, and the movie didn't go anywhere, thank God, but it would have been a decent amount of money. Why didn't you do it? To me...
Because it would have been a crappy half a year.
I would have had to work 18 months for people I didn't like, and it was a horrible idea. So I was working as a writer, and I took a class just to kind of get myself back into it. Took a broad, at a JC at Santa Monica College, took a broadcasting class with a gentleman named Lou Riggs, who just passed away in July. And Lou kind of mentored me. He kind of pulled me aside and said, hey, you could probably do this. I could tell. I said, yeah, I was a college, I did radio in college, blah, blah, blah. I said, once we get rid of your bad habits, we can make something out of you. And he's worked with, if you watch TV, Chris McGee's one of his guys, and Chris Marlowe, who's the Nuggets play-by-play guy, and a bunch of the Heather Cox is one of it. So I took the class, didn't think much of it, and kind of kept in touch with Lou, and I made tapes. I was one of these guys who I'd go to a game, I would go to a JC game, and just have a little digital recorder, just talking to the recorder and do the play-by-play, and that's how I got the job at Riverside. And then once I got to Riverside, it was just a matter of finding the time. As we were joking about, it's just like when you have a day job that requires to maintain your lifestyle, it's tough to find the time, but you just do it. Yeah. You just do it.
What's the biggest bad habit for play-by-play guys? You talked about getting rid of bad habits. Just give me one or two.
My pet peeves are guys who talk about numbers. Now, I'll occasionally reference a number. For example, I think I did it the other day because, Isaac Fleming for Hawaii wears 0, as does Kendall Smith. Mm-hmm. So I'll say, Kendall Smith matched up with Isaac Fleming. It's 0 guarding 0.
Right.
Okay. But I've heard broadcasters who talk numbers. Oh, 14. I said, listen. If they're watching on TV, they can see the guy. And if they're listening on radio, they don't care. Right. So don't give the number. Right. Mispronounce. I'm a bit of an OCD guy.
Is the number thing part of prep, though, right? I mean, in terms of knowing who's number what or watching a game ahead of time? Because otherwise you would just say, instead of saying 34, you'd say Brian Bennett. And maybe it's a way for them to say number 34, Brian Bennett,
cheat. But mispronunciations is tough.
Oh, yeah.
Because most schools provide a pronunciation guide.
Right.
And what I'll do is I'll actually, if it's, because sometimes the pronunciation guide isn't correct. You have to ask the athlete.
Mm-hmm.
We did that on Thursday with Stefan Jankovic. Now, the Serbo-Croatian names are a bit different because there's a lot of factors involved. So we just called him over. Stefan, how do you pronounce your last name? And he said, Jankovic. So, okay, you're Stefan Jankovic now. Sometimes
instead of Yankovic,
yeah, there was
as in Weird Al,
Yankovic. That's Yankovic. That's the anglicized version. Uh-huh. I was just listening to I Lost on Jeopardy for some reason randomly.
This is the home of Weird Al. You know that, right?
That's right. He's an alum. Yeah. That's right. I was house sitting Beverly Hills, and I used to see him walk his dog right by the Four Seasons on Beverly and Doheny. Uh-huh. It's the weirdest thing because I'd seen Mike Myers, Al Yankovic. And who's the third person? Oh, Ruth Buzzy. I don't know if you know who Ruth Buzzy is. When I was a kid, she used to be on this show called the Far Out Space Nuts. And, so I see weird people. But mispronunciations, you know, check the pronunciation guide or check with the player.
Yeah.
In basketball, especially on radio, I don't like when people don't give directionals. And there's some of the local teams for LA, we'll leave the names out.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's Smith over to Bennett, over to Nuaba, I don't really know what's going on.
Right, as opposed to left side, top of the key.
There's a court, it's laid out, you can tell us. I mean, I try to be very detailed, but if you just want to say foul line, wing, that
left
works.
Wing, right, yeah.
I think, like, what? You know, you give
that, me, that makes sense, though. No, those two are, like, big, I think, and I don't
say
do
the score, Owen. Say the score.
More over and over, every time somebody, or, you know, a lot when somebody, yeah, you know, I've done some color like at high school stuff, but I'm not a play-by-play guy by any means. But it's always interesting.
They say I'm not either, but if that makes you feel any better.
Hey, but technically you are. So a couple lightning round things. Who are your? You said you voted John's your Big West Player of the Year
right.
Preseason. So give me like who's your all-conference team right now this point in the year? Five or so games left in conference.
See, I'm a little different. I like to do it by every position.
Okay.
So give me Roderick Bobbitt.
At point.
Give me Ahima the point guard. I'd love to have him and Bibbins play together.
You know, Bibbins has, when he came here, and Pauly beat Long Beach here, mm-hmm. but in that game, Bibbins controlled the whole thing as a sophomore. He was emphatically telling Faust where to be on the floor. He was telling the senior from Maryland, like,
right.
exactly what time it was and where you needed to be. You know, at 5'9", he was controlling the game in a savvy way that I haven't seen a lot of people do since, like, a Casper. I mean, you know, he's not Casper Ware, but, like, he's...
True point guard.
He's a true point guard, and he's a guy that Munson's got to love having in his program for two more years.
I love Justin Bibbins for two reasons. One, he can ball.
Yeah.
And two, he allows me to drop in the Belle Biv DeVoe reference
during
a Long Beach State game.
For sure. So you think Bibbins and
Bobbitt? All right, so let's go.
Bobbitt? Who at the two?
So I can't give... Probably Jalen Bland at the two.
Yeah, okay.
I like Jalen Bland. This is going to be a biased move, but no. Trey Hale-Edmerson's got to find a place. He can either play the three or the stretch four, because I have a feeling, I mean, I think they'll be good next year, the Matadors, but they're going to miss him. Because he does all the things you don't see in the box score.
Oh, he's got crazy, I've always said he's like physically the most, the craziest imposing player in the conference. The Big West tournament game a couple years ago, I think I tweeted I misspelled his name in tweets like four or five times. I'm sitting on the baseline, and like I can't read the back of his jersey very well. And I got my camera. I'm trying to tweet about, because he for like a 10 or 15 minute stretch there, he tore it up. He was incredible. He carried them for a lot of that second half there in that game, making threes, getting to the basket, getting the foul line. I mean, it was, and I was like, who is this guy? You know, because obviously Maxwell and Hicks were the two, Steven and Stefan, who I was mixed up. But you know, I'm like, dang, this guy is just incredible. And you know, he's 6'10", like legit, like 6'9".
No.
6'8"?
I asked Trey. Trey's 6'7". They list him at 6'9". He's 6'7". But he's got
he's got arms. Yeah, and
he can jump. You know, he was a football player and a javelin guy in high school.
So he seems... Tell me if and we don't have a ton of time, because I gotta get to Tom too today, but he seems like kind of one of the more like hard guys to get your finger on, because to put your finger on, you know, he dunks on NJI in that game. I've watched a couple CSUN games. You know, he dunks on NJI and then gets a technical after. Like, there's just like, it's just like, man, he's almost to a point where he would be just almost unstoppable, it seems like. And the way you talk about him, you know, sometimes guys like that aren't thinking. Maybe he's thinking too much. I don't know.
I think he's too deferential. I think he could, if he wanted to. I mean, if you look at his career stats, he's averaging about 6.5 a game.
Right.
He could have easily been a double figure, 1,000-point guy.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's got all the other skills. He does all the things coaches like. And I know that's part of what frustrates Reggie is. He does everything right, and then sometimes he'll get upset with his teammates when they do something wrong.
Right.
That doesn't help things. But he is. I mean, he's with.
Okay. So we got Bobbitt.
So obviously you got Mamadou in the middle.
Mamadou in the middle.
So let's go Bobbitt, Jalen Bland. Let's put Trey at the three, because I'm going to be biased.
Oh.
And who's my power forward? You know,
I
love Nuaba too.
Wouldn't you put Trey at the four maybe and
make him a stretch four?
Okay, so Faust. What about Faust or Smith? I feel like Faust and Smith are kind of on that level in terms of a three or a wing.
Yeah, I'd put Faust. You know, put Faust at the three and Trey at the four, and then David Nuaba is our sixth man, and
okay.
and then we'll go to battle.
You'll go to battle.
We'll get you to coach.
Get
a, we'll,
get a couple guys off the street to fill out the roster.
You know, I saw Jankovic the other day. He's fantastic.
Calero said Jankovic might be the most talented, best NBA prospect he's seen in the Big West since he's been here. Yeah. And that includes, you know, Al Williams and other guys.
Yeah, he does so many things inside, outside. And he just it's so the consistency is the key with him. Yeah. But, I mean, there's guys on every team. Long Beach has a bunch of talented guys. Yeah. We talked about Bibbins and we talked about Faust. And I think Bibbins is just only going to get better. Yeah. And
I think Luke Nelson is way underrated. His ability to control a game, and he gets his 10 or 12, but, like, six of those are on consecutive threes in the middle of a 12-0 Irvine run. Yeah. And the run that separates them from whatever team. You know, Irvine's playing neck and neck with whoever they're playing, and they make a 12-0 run or a 12-2 run, and two of those are on, like, pull-up threes at the exact right time from Nelson.
I always said this about Irvine. Like, the last three or four years, they probably had 7 or 8 of the top 20 players in the league. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the top 5, but, like, from 6 to 13 or 6 to 11. Yeah. They're all, you know, Nelson and Young's.
Amazing.
He had 34 against CSUN, the big guy in the middle. You know, Mike Best has played very well this year.
Will Davis was incredible.
Yeah. I'm a big Will Davis fan. He's one of the all-time scorers there. Turner's done such a great job there in terms of not getting to the level, but being able to maintain with the recruits he's bringing in.
All right. So give me like 2 minutes on Tom Barquette. I know he's on his way out here at Cal Poly, retiring after this basketball season. So, you know, potentially, you know, six or so more games left if they don't make a run in the tournament. Okay. So tell me about Tom.
This is a funny story. Yeah. So Tom and I have become friendly. And I knew him a little bit before I started doing the men's games. But so my first real interaction with Tom is I upset him. Because I was doing the women's games at the time for, I think it was either UCR or CSUN, and Dave Grant. I'd gotten to know Dave Grant a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then we went to the tournament, and they didn't have Grant do the games. They had Barquette do the games.
Right.
So I tweeted, oh, come on, Cal Poly, you gotta come with a bunch of the dance. And so, and Tom was cool about it, but Tom made this dry, sarcastic, I was like, oh, you don't even want me to do it. But no, he explained that it was a money thing, right? Yeah. It's like, well, you know, they're already paying for me to be here, so I have to do as many games for them as possible, which I understood.
Makes sense.
But just a good guy.
Big West school's got to be conscious.
No, it's what it is, and it's not like, you know, you're at CSUN or Fullerton where you guys have to hotel and all that stuff, and I get it. And you know, Dave was telling me, well, because his family lives down there, so like, well, I could have stayed with my family; it wouldn't have cost them a cent, you know. But you know, I get it. You know, now that I'm in Tom's position, I understand what he says because this year with the men not going to the tournament, I may end up calling the women's games for CSUN
for sure.
But so that was my first interaction with Tom. So I'm like, oh man, I got to be careful with this guy, you know. But we became friendly, obviously, because when I started doing the men's games for CSUN. But we share a love for the sitcom Taxi.
Okay.
You know, and if you talk to Tom, he's such a straight laced guy. You wouldn't think he's into Taxi, but he loves Reverend Jim, Christopher Lloyd's character on Taxi.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Taxi fan, and so we started talking about that. And you know, Tom's an interesting guy. I got to know him doing baseball as well. When I was doing baseball,
right.
He was doing baseball for Cal Poly.
Okay.
And, you know, so just some great stories. Yeah. And he's been a fixture here, so it's going to be interesting. Do you have any idea? Are there any names floating for who they're going to bring in?
So Dave's doing baseball this year,
right?
And then after that, I think it's up. I think it's just up for whatever. I don't know exactly how it's going to work. I think Dave's actually moving too, so I think it's like. They gotta be looking for something. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's happening exactly. Tom's been doing football, baseball, and basketball for the better part of the last decade, basically here. So certainly it's a kind of an era of Cal Poly sports that included a hosted baseball regional for the first time. That included NCAA tournament for the first time. The first time I talked to Tom, and I'll tell him this in the podcast I'm gonna tape with him right after this. Mm-hmm. The first time I heard Tom on the radio was actually when the Cal Poly volleyball team was in the NCAA playoffs hosting a game here. Tom called a volleyball game on the radio, and I'm thinking to myself, volleyball must be really big here, and they got a guy calling on, it's on the radio? Like, what's going on here? This must be a really big deal. I had moved away for college and then for 3 years after that, so I was gone for 7 or 8 years, mm-hmm. came back in the area and turned the radio on to this, you know, sports radio station that I knew existed. Wasn't there when I left, otherwise I would have probably tried to intern there in college, you know, mm-hmm. when I was on the summer or whatever, but came back and heard Tom's voice calling volleyball and said, yeah, this, you know, calling volleyball must be really hard, but he's doing okay at it. He must, you know, kind of do it, and it's the, you know, volleyball is probably the hardest thing to call in the whole world. So aside from hockey, maybe, who, you know, Chris Ello and guys like that in San Diego, who I mean,
Craig Elson, that's my man. San Diego Gulls guy. Yeah,
yeah. Ello used to call the Gulls, and I actually interned for the Gulls in college. I used to do, you know, media relations.
Are you a hockey guy?
I love hockey.
Okay.
Yeah, I love hockey. I, I'm I'm an everything guy. I interned for the Gulls. I wrote for the paper at UCSD. I did, you know, I did whatever I could.
Tritons, right?
UCSD. Maybe the next Big West school, and maybe that'll be, maybe later
then
on.
They can recruit you to come down there.
The SID at Davis, along with me,
Art Bankston?
Uh-huh.
Oh, are you?
He's
right,
a UCSD Triton.
Both UCSD guys.
He's UCSD, yeah.
So. My story about La Jolla is when I was a writer for Pauly Shore, that's where he owned a condo down there, and we would go work there.
Yeah.
So people, I would work through 4th of July, and people are like, oh, you got to work?
Right.
I'm like, trust me, it's fine. You can wake up with waves crashing, it's fine.
Gisela Hassan, I really appreciate you taking the time today. Good luck the rest of the season. And honestly, CSUN's going to be a monster next year. People got
to
watch out.
All right. Owen, thanks a lot. Great to meet you.
Yeah, you as
and,
well.
And I'm sorry I jumped in. I know people don't know. Owen's wife is expecting, and she wasn't feeling very well.
Oh,
so
no.
Thank you for taking the time.
No, absolutely.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out.